Good evening and welcome to Boston University's World of Ideas. I'm Deborah Becker. Tonight we have a lecture presented by the African Studies Center and the African American Studies Program at Boston University. Tonight's lecture is titled The Internal African Diaspora, Tracing the Origins of Ganawa Spiritual Music in Morocco. Speaking will be Dr. Choke L. Hamill, Professor of History at Arizona State University. We begin with an introduction by James Pritchett, Director of the African Studies Center.
Let me welcome you to the African Studies Center at Boston University for tonight's presentation in our lecture series, Persistence and Permutations in the African Diaspora. Recently, we formally acknowledged that the study of the African diaspora should extend beyond the study of the Black Atlantic. We acknowledge that the same processes of voluntary and involuntary movement of people and social processes into the Atlantic world indeed have their parallel in the Indian Ocean world, and that Africans were indeed part and parcel of that Indian Ocean world and were participants and producers of that world. One of our earlier speakers, Henry Drewell, for example, spoke to us about one component of that Indian Ocean world, the Cedis of India. The subject of tonight's lecture, however, is even more provocative. It begins with an assertion that the movement of African folks west across the Atlantic Ocean and east across the Indian Ocean indeed have another parallel in the movement of Africans north across the ocean of sand that was the Sahara, or that still is the Sahara Desert, and that there remains in North Africa and the Mediterranean distinct communities of folks who share much in common with African diaspora communities elsewhere and whose current conditions inform and are informed by the study of the African diaspora elsewhere. Indeed, our guest tonight, Dr. Choke L. Hamill, asserts the utility of bringing into being the concept of an internal African diaspora. Dr. Hamill received his undergraduate degree in Morocco in African history. He received his doctorate from the University of Paris, Sorbonne in January 1993. His training in France at the African Research Center was in pre-colonial African history. His interests have focused on the spread and the growth of Islamic culture and the evolution of Islamic institutions in Africa. His research is evidenced in published articles and a book concerning intellectual life in pre-colonial Islamic West Africa. He has taught African history at North Carolina State University in Raleigh and at Duke University from 1994 to 2001. 2001 and 2002, he was a scholar in residence at the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture in New York City. And in 2002, he joined the history department at Arizona State University. I should add at this point that discussions about slavery and things associated with slavery are difficult under any condition. Such discussions are generally shot through with issues of power and class and race and sex, which is a very deadly mixture indeed. It's a mix that becomes even more so when it is situated in a culture and religious context in which it cuts against the grain, when it stands out in bold relief, in blatant opposition to a grand narrative that states that issues of power and class and race and sex should pale in comparison to the existence of a grand unifying paradigm, in this case, Islam. In most cases, the selection of a topic for academic research is a pretty frivolous act. It's an act of selfish indulgence. You simply pick whatever you like. There are some cases, however, in which it is an act of courage. When I was planning this discussion series, this lecture series, and knowing that the African diaspora in the Mediterranean world needed to be included, I asked around. I asked our own Cynthia Becker, I asked Michael Gomez, who out there has the scholarly acumen, the nuanced understanding, the bravery to address such a delicate topic. All fingers pointed in one direction, toward our guest tonight. So from Arizona State University, speaking on the internal African diaspora, tracing the origins of Nawa spiritual music in Morocco, join me in welcoming Dr. Choke L. Hamill.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Professor James and Cynthia. And I'm really honored to be here in this the smartest city on the planet, as they say. I read it on the magazine on a plane coming here. So I thought I should just use it, you know. The title of my presentation is Tracing the Origins of Gnawa Spiritual Music in Morocco. Many Western visitors to Morocco have likely encountered Gnawa musicians in the coastal Atlantic town of Essaouira, where an annual festival of Gnawa music takes place, and in Marrakesh, at its spectacular central square called Jam Al Fna, the colorful sight of the Gnawa players and distinct sound of their instruments, gowns and caps covered with cowrie shells, metallic castanets, heavy drums, and a three-stringed bass lute called gambri provide confirmation of the Gnawa presence. Of the musical traditions that can be found in Morocco, Gnawa music is probably the tradition that has the most obscure roots. In this essay, I attempt to reconstruct the origin of the formation of the Gnawa and to locate and identify the space where they have managed to preserve their cultural identity in the dominant Arabo-Islamic culture. Some of the best-known genres of music to all Moroccans come from the Andalusian legacy. It is the classical Andalusian music reflecting Morocco's historic relationship with Spain. Andalusian music is recognized as a national music and enjoys wide popularity, mainly among middle and upper classes, and especially in cities that were historically connected with Muslim Spain. Another musical genre stems from the Berbers, which is an older traditional music and tends to be more rural, whereas the Andalusian genre is considered to be more urban. The Sephardic population has also contributed to Morocco's musical heritage, but unfortunately, the folk songs from the Jewish communities in Morocco are vanishing, because most of Morocco's Jewish population has relocated to Israel. Another important but often neglected genre of Moroccan music is that of the Gnawa, who came from West Africa to Morocco by way of migration, both voluntary and forced. Although the Gnawa are now fully integrated into Moroccan society, they still remain a cultural and social distinctiveness. It is difficult to define the initial ethnic designation of the Gnawa, but we know that they are undoubtedly black, whether Sudanese, meaning West African, or autochthonous. The term Gnawa has three important meanings. One, the first one, Gnawa refers mainly to black people who were enslaved from West Africa. Second, Gnawa defines both a religious and spiritual order of a traditionally black Muslim group. And three, Gnawa denotes the style of music associated with this order. In the case of their ethnic designation, it is commonly believed that the Gnawa who now live in Morocco were originally black slaves who became free over time under various historical circumstances. Historians believe that the Gnawa population originated from black West Africa, from Senegal to Chad, and from Mali in the north to Nigeria in the south. Many of these enslaved people are thought to come from old Ghana, a kingdom north of Mali in the 11th through the 13th century. These enslaved groups were called Gnawa. As a religious and spiritual order, the Gnawa are traditionally a mystic order, and as such, marks their exclusiveness within Islam. As a style of music, the ancestral memory of the displaced and enslaved people that were brought to Morocco has been preserved in their songs and dances. For both, second meaning Gnawa as religious and spiritual order, and third, as music style, And the religious and spiritual components of the Gnawa practice are expressed through their music, which incorporates references to their origin and enslavement. Although the Gnawa have adopted the Arabo-Berber Islamic form of social identification, their music represents a fascinating admix of resistance to enslavement, the rigors of forced migration, and the challenges of integration into their new social landscape. In the discussion that follows, I will elaborate on each of the three meanings of Gnawa in turn, with the caveat that in the case of Gnawa as religious spiritual order and Gnawa as style of music associated with this order, there is a good deal of overlap between them as they are not strictly separable and in many ways inform one another. By way of conclusion, I look at how Gnawa music has attained a degree of pop status in the contemporary Moroccan social landscape. The term Gnawa refers importantly to a color designation, and a good deal of insight into the origin of the Gnawa can be inferred from this fact. Historically, it means the black people. Not all blacks in Morocco were slaves that originated from West Africa. Some blacks were actually native to southern Morocco. Some sources suggest that groups of black people were indigenous in the Daraa Valley. They were sedentary agriculturalists. With the advance of the Romans into the Moroccan interior in the 3rd century BCE, the Berbers who inhabited the coastal areas of the Maghreb of North Africa may have been forced toward the south and into competition with the black population who inhabited the oasis of Daraa, entering into an interdependent or clientele relationship with the blacks, with the Berbers assuming the patron role. Etymologically speaking, the meaning of Gnawa likely derives from the Berber word aginaw, which is connected with skin color. It means black man, in contrast to the white Berber. This word could be the origin of the name Guinea, because Akal Niginnamen in Berber means the land of the black man, synonymous with the Arabic term Bilad al-Sudan, which means land of the black people. Another possible etymology for Gnawa might be from the influence of the 16th century Moroccan historian Leo Africanus, who used the words of Gini or Gene to refer to Guinea. I'm quoting him, "This kingdom called by the African merchants Genoa, by its inhabitants Gini, and by the Portuguese and other Europeans who know the area as Guinea." The end of the quote. The term was indeed adopted by the Portuguese and appeared pervasively as Guinea on European maps dating from the 14th century. There is historical evidence that a large enslaved population came from the great market of Djenne, and that Gnawi could be a slight deformation of Jinawi or Al-Jinawi. The hitherto oldest evidence came from the 12th century Islamic legal scholar. His name is Ali Al-Jaziri, who wrote a legal document in the form of a model contract of manumission of an enslaved person. And in it, he says, a person so-and-so manumitted his slave so-and-so al-Jinawi. In the writings of a 17th century Islamic legal scholar, Muhammad al-Masmudi, concerning some legal issues from Sijil Massa, an old city in the south of Morocco, presently in ruin, one finds a similar contact. If one finds a similar contract which states a person so-and-so manumitted his slave al-Knawi or al-Jinawi in other copy. Hence, according to these Islamic legal texts, Jinawi or Jinawi and Knawi or Gnawi were used interchangeably as a generic term to designate a black slave from West Africa. Djenne is a city situated in present-day Mali between Niger and the Bani, a tributary of the Niger River. The 17th century Timbuktu historian Abdurrahman al-Sa'di designated the date of the foundation of the city around 767 AD. Arabic sources indicate that there was a steady flow of human trafficking across the Saharan desert from the 10th to the 19th centuries. Since the Almoravid dynasty in the 11th century, enslavement, conscription, and trade brought people from West Africa, mainly from the area of present-day Mali, Burkina Faso, and Senegal, and Chad and Niger area, to the Maghreb, Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and Libya. These enslaved groups were usually called either Abid or Sudan, both Arabic words, or Haratin or Gnawa, both Berber words. We can thus name among the ancestors of the black Moroccans of today the Soninke, the Bambara, the Mossi, the Fulani, and the Hausa. Archival sources indicate the use of blacks in the armies of the Makhzen, meaning the central authority of Morocco, and in many cases entire garrisons consisted solely of black soldiers. Many dynasties relied on black soldiers to maintain their power. The first ruling dynasty in Morocco to use a large number of black slaves in the army during the Islamic era was the Almoravids, Almoravitun. During the Almoravids, the ruler Yusuf ibn Tashafin bought a body of black slaves and sent them to Al-Andalus. With the additional troops provided through the slave trade, the Almoravids defeated Alfonso VI of Castile in 1086 at the crucial battle of Zalaca near Badajoz. Arabic sources indicate that 4,000 black soldiers participated in this famous battle. During the succeeding dynasty called Almohad, the rulers had a private garrison of black soldiers who also served as royal guards, and during the rule of Muhammad al-Nasir around 1200, their number reached around 30,000. During this dynasty, the recruitment of the enslaved blacks in the government became institutionalized, known as Abid al-Makhzan, meaning servants of the government. A third dynasty that used a large army of blacks was the Sa'di, who under the rule of Mawlay al-Mansur invaded the Songhai Empire in present-day Mali in 1591, which allowed them direct access to acquire more black slaves, essentially for military purposes. With this conquest, Morocco became a vast empire, spreading from the Mediterranean Sea to the Niger River. The Moroccan customs, writes historian Michel Abitbol, were henceforth stationed not only in Sousse, in Dara, and in Tafilalt, far south of Morocco, but also in Timbuktu and Djenne. Relations between Morocco and Black West Africa, two regions separated by Sea of Sand, historically shared a remarkable continuity, given that a dominant aspect of that continuity was the slave trade. The conscription of black regiments was taken to the extreme when in late 17th century, Mawlay Ismail gave orders to enslave all blacks, including free black people, to create his own army. Of course, this was an act completely against Islamic law, but he did it anyway. In addition to the conscription of blacks into the army, enslaved black West Africans were also assigned numerous occupations, including tasks in the homes, farms, mines, oases, and ports. In many towns, slaves were primarily women who performed domestic labor or were concubines to the affluent class, while rural slaves were mainly male and worked in farming. Gradually, enslaved black people were freed either by a manumission, by running away, or because their masters were forced to grant them freedom under different circumstances. After many generations, these freed black slaves eventually formed their own families and communities, such as those of the Gnawa mystic order. While adopting Islam, Gnawa did not totally abandon their animist traditions, but rather continued to observe ritual possession. They combined Islamic tradition with pre-Islamic African traditions, whether local or sub-Saharan West African. elements of pre-Islamic West African animism, such as the belief in the spirit world, are fundamental to the Gnawa order. For the Gnawa, the spirit world is inhabited by ancestral spirits who, among other spiritual creatures, can be used for either good or evil purposes. Ancestors are believed to act as intermediaries between the living and the supreme God, and the Gnawa communicate with their ancestors through prayer and sacrifice. The spirit world is also invoked through special ceremonies constituted by drumming, clapping, the sound of castanets and dances, all designed to enlist the aid of ancestral saints to protect human beings from evil spirits and other predicaments, such as helping persons recover from illness or misfortune. These rites often involve spectacular trances through which contact with and appeal to ancestral spirits may be gained. Historically, as a racial minority, the Gnawa suffered much discrimination and injustice at the hands of the Arab Berber majority within the regions that the Gnawa inhabited. After their initial conversion to Islam, while probably still in their country of origin, the Gnawa adopted Bilal as their ancestor and patron saint. Bilal was the first black person to convert to Islam and became a companion of the Prophet Muhammad. Claiming Bilal as a patrilineal figure was not only to emphasize the nobility of belonging to Bilal, but also an attempt to legitimize their identity in Islamic terms. Conscious of their difference and their blackness, they chose Bilal, a black man, as agnet. Bilal was a special man, originally from Ethiopia. He was born into slavery. He converted to Islam while still in captivity and was tortured for his conversion by his master, Umayyah bin Khalaf. When Abu Bakr as-Siddiq, a very close friend to the Prophet Muhammad, heard about the valor of Bilal, he bought him and set him free in the name of Islam. Bilal became the personal servant or assistant of the Prophet. He was also the first muazzin, meaning caller to prayer, of the newly established Islamic community in Medina. This special relationship between the Prophet brought Bilal Bilal a baraka, a divine blessing. The Gnawa have constructed their Islamic identity by emphasizing a privileged status among Muslims. They converted to Islam even before Quraysh, the tribe to whom Muhammad belonged. Hence, it is not surprising to find the name of Bilal in many Gnawa songs. Additionally, to honor their spiritual and emotional link with Bilal and Islam, the Gnawa built a unique shrine in Essaouira dedicated to Bilal. It's called Zawiya Sidna Bilal, a place to celebrate their culture. Bilal is the symbol of the dialectic between diaspora and homeland. The Gnawa are a diasporic culture, and one finds artistic and spiritual parallels between the Gnawa order and other spiritual black groups in Africa, such as the Bori in Nigeria, the Stamboli in Tunisia, the Sambani in Libya, and the Bilali in Algeria. Outside Africa, one can also see a parallel, as in the case of the Candomblé in Salvador, Brazil, where the African enslaved population found their beliefs in African spirits compatible with local beliefs, and with the introduction of Catholicism, they created a hybrid religious form while still under the horrors of servitude. The Vodun, or Voodoo, religion practiced in Caribbean countries is also a mix of Roman Catholic ritual elements and traditional rituals from Dahomey. The similarities in the artistic, spiritual, and scriptural, I mean here by scriptural, related to Abrahamic written traditions, representations seem to reflect a shared experience of many African diasporic groups. As in these other spiritual traditions, the belief in possession And trance is crucial to Gnawa religious life, and their music has served a patent function in this belief. Intrinsically linked to the Gnawa religious rituals and to their specific historic and cultural memories, the Gnawa music embodies their specific histories and cultural memories celebrated and invoked in songs, dances, and musical chants, all of which are claimed and used by the Gnawa as the means to access the spiritual realm. Although most present-day Gnawa musicians are Métis and speak Arabic and Berber, some West African religious words and phrases do survive, even though their meaning is lost. The lack of primary written sources on the Gnawa makes the task of the historian all that much more difficult when trying to provide as accurate a depiction as possible of the historical trajectory of this fascinating ethnicity. It is only from fragmented primary records that I was able to assemble this description of the Gnawa people in Morocco, made more difficult because Arab Muslim scholars avoided writing about the rituals of animal sacrifice, spirit possession, and mystical trances. Even the Encyclopedia of Islam, one of the most illustrious and reliable sources about the world of Islam, has no entry on the Gnawa. Islamic orders that include such practices were considered heretical and a deviation of the Sunnah, the right path of the Prophet Muhammad, and therefore dismissed altogether from any local scholarly inquiry. The historian must resort to ethnographical studies and Gnawa oral sources to reconstruct the historical antecedents that figure into the formation and the meaning of the Gnawa spiritual order. Another way to analyze and to recover this opaque history of the Gnawa is to trace Gnawa cultural practices and beliefs among other spiritual orders and brotherhoods. The Gnawa have influenced Berber and Arab mystic orders and brotherhoods, as can be seen in the case of the Isawiya that was founded in 16th century and Hamdushiya in the 17th century. These brotherhoods added new elements to the usual Sufi devotional rituals, such as trances and contacts with spirits, most likely influenced by contact with the Gnawa order. Curiously, these Zawaya or other Sufi Berber and Arabic orders have been far more socially accepted within the regions where they are found than that of the Gnawa. Among Muslim intellectuals, these brotherhoods, including the Gnawa, are considered an inferior form of Sufism, a cult influenced by paganistic black traditions and embraced mostly by low-class people with little or no literacy and learning. The association of Gnawa with slavery and sub-Saharan traditions was a prejudice that blinded Moroccans to the merits of Gnawa contributions to and influence on the rich cultural traditions of Morocco. Viviana Pak, an ethnologist who wrote extensively on the Gnawa, says that dismissing the influence of the Gnawa is a serious mistake, I'm quoting her, because their cosmogonic system is not different from other brotherhoods' systems. Regarding Gnawa practices, they have greatly influenced other brotherhoods that at the end of their ceremonial songs and dances they add, for example, like the Isawa brotherhood, something from the Gnawa, such as the veils of colors, characteristics of their mystical journey. The English anthropologist Edward Westermarck, 1862-1939, after 7 years of field work in Morocco between 1898 and 1926, observed and speculated that, quoting him, this influence on the other mystic orders is very conspicuous form from the rites of the Gnawa and will probably prove to have had a considerably larger scope than is known at present. Later, in respect to the origin of Gnawa practices, he concluded that there can be no doubt that various practices connected with the belief of the Jnun spirits have a Sudanese, meaning black, origin. We have seen that these are intimate relations between the Jnun and Negroes and the Gnawa, chiefly consisting of Negroes, are experts in expelling Jnun from persons who are troubled with them. The French ethnologist René Brunel, who studied the mystic order of the Isawa in 1920s, argued that ritual sacrifice used by the Isawa as means to establish contact with the spirit world is a Sudanese, mainly Bambara, practice borrowed from the Gnawa group. Brunel adds, the Isawa extensively devote themselves to the practices of spiritual possession and exorcism peculiar to the Gnawa. The Gnawa are experts in exorcism, and the Isawa master healer exorcist adopted many Gnawa practices and rituals. The Gnawa rely on their musical instruments to communicate with the spirit world, one of which, a three-stringed lute called gambri. It's used as the primary invocation to call on the spirits. The Isawa, too, use musical instruments to communicate with the spirit world, but turn to an oboe-like instrument called gaita as their primary means to call on the jinn. Another inference that can be made about the influence of the Gnawa on the Isawa derives from the Isawa belief in at least five black spirits, and even more suggestive, the king of their jinn, of their spirit world, is black and called Gnawi. One finds other Arab Berber brotherhoods similar to the Isawa who practice the saint cult and spirit position cult, such as Hamdushiya Brotherhood, founded by Sidi Ali ben Hamdush, who is associated with the black she demon Jinniya Gnawiya Lalla Aisha. An American anthropologist, Vincent Carapanzano, also concluded from his field in Morocco that the Hmadsha themselves, as well as most other Moroccans of their background, recognize the Gnawa origin of many of their named Jnun. From the above discussion, one can see the indelible influence and contribution of the Gnawa on Moroccan mysticism. Gnawa trance ceremonies are called Dardaba, ritual of possession, and generally take place after sundown. For this reason, they are also called Layla, meaning night in Arabic. The Gnawa believe that many misfortunes are not just accidental, but likely caused by evil spirits. And through their musical ceremonies and trances, the Gnawa claim to cure insanity and free people from these evil influences. Many people from all walks of life who suffer from afflictions due to acute illness, infertility, or depression seek the spiritual intercession of the Gnawa's art. Sometimes people seek their intercession to preserve their good fortune. The Gnawa orchestra has many musicians. The Ma'alam, lead musician, plays the gambri, which is a three-stringed bass lute, and other members of the group play tbal, drums, and karkaba, metallic castanet. Generally, they dance as well. Music and dance are spiritual partners to the Gnawa. The ceremony usually takes place inside the house shrine center of a Gnawa family group and likely will last throughout the night. The first part of the ceremony is more of a mundane warming-up exercise for what follows. The traditional Gnawa ceremony includes seven sections. Each section represents seven saints or ancestral spirits. Each section is associated with a particular color: white, blue, red, green, black, yellow, and a mix of colors. And each color symbolizes a particular function in nature and in the spirit world. The ceremony is characterized by well-established rituals, such as a sacrifice of a sheep or a goat, clothes of different colors, eating dates, drinking milk aromatized with rose water, and the burning of incense. The most visible and fundamental trait of this ceremony is a kind of awe of call and response, chant, coupled with dance. Some participants go into trance through which a particular spirit may express its wish for the appropriate tune and the preferred color. Layla will continue until the goal is achieved, the trance is over, and the participant has been cleansed from his or her afflictions. Through such ceremonies and practices, the Gnawa seem to transform themselves from their socially constructed identities, identities engendered through centuries of acculturation into Moroccan society after first arriving as enforced migrants, and re-embody themselves into a spiritually constructed identity, stripped of their social identities and mundane worldly affairs. As a spiritual order within Moroccan Islamic society, the Gnawa were and continue to be marginalized. They believe that God is too powerful for bilateral communication or even direct manifestation, and thus God can only be reached through spiritual manifestations in our world. Hence, the Gnawa are generally not considered by most Muslim intellectuals a mystic order proper, because they do not seek the conventional personal union with the divine, but rather contact with the spirit world, which acts as an intermediary through which contact with divine may be accomplished. Yet, the Gnawa have found a degree of legitimacy for their cultural distinctiveness within the regions and societies they inhabit, even given their unusual and often marginalized religious rites, ceremonies, and musical practices. The images conveyed in their songs construct a coherent representation of displacement, disposition, deprivation, misery, and nostalgia for a land and a former life kept alive through their unique musical and ceremonial practices. The historical experience of the Gnawa, sketched in this essay, is very similar to those found in all forced African diasporas. Through their ceremonies, their songs and gatherings, these people made restitution not of an imagined community, but a real one. To reconcile a fragmented past, they are connected with their origin, they have a sense of location, and they share a common experience through enslavement and its legacy. The Gnawa provide a fascinating story of how people reconstruct their identity against a broken cultural continuity. Drawing on their African musical heritage, the Gnawa have also created a music genre in Morocco that provided an outlet to cope with the horrors of servitude. The Gnawa originally used their music and dance to express and to heal the pain of their captivity. Gnawa lyrics contain many references to the privations of exile and slavery. In some songs, we find words that express the trauma of being displaced and the deep hurt of losing their homes. In this regard, Gnawa music is very similar to spirituals and blues that are rooted in Black American slave songs. This is well illustrated in the following song. The lyrics, they brought us from the Sudan, the nobles of this country brought us. They brought us to serve them, they brought us to bow to them, they brought us all. There is no God but God. We believe in God's justice. In another song, they say, the Sudan, meaning Black West Africa, the origin of the Gnawa. The Sudan, oh Sudan, the Sudan, the land of my people. I was enslaved, I was sold, I was taken away from my loved ones. René Brunel recorded similar lyrics during a Gnawa seance of position in the city of Meknes, one of the early modern imperial city. The group was playing the same instruments in 1920s when Brunel was engaged in his field work that they play today in Essaouira or Marrakech, the three-stringed lute gambri, castanets and drums, and singing a song entitled Sidi Mimoun, Oh Saint Sidi Mimoun, our Lord goes to the land of Sudan. He brought a servant, Gnawiya, O God, O Prophet. To find out more about slave songs, I was able briefly to interview a Gnawa master named Mahmoud Ginia Organia. Before that, took him away shortly after my first interview in 2000. So I am here relying on a sketchy unfinished product. According to Mr. Ganya, the oldest Gnawa song is the Mbara song, the historical slave song goes, O God, our Lord, my uncle Mbara is a miserable man. What a fate does he have? My uncle Mbara is a poor man. Our lady eats meat. Our master eats meat. My uncle Mbara knows at the bone. Our lady wears elegant shoes. Our master wears beautiful shoes. My uncle Mbara wears sandals. My uncle Mbara entertains in the market. Our God is our guide. This is the predicament of the deprived, our poor uncle Mbara. This song reflects the pained consciousness of the successive wrongs suffered by these enslaved black people, the historic and contemporary inequalities of the Gnawa's social and economic status in Morocco are clearly displayed in this song. The Gnawa have, over many generations, productively negotiated their forced presence in Morocco to create acceptance and group solidarity. Unlike the conventional question in Black America, who are we? The Gnawa ask, who have we become? Similar to the model of creolization that was in among the black Brazilians in Salvador, or in Haiti, the integration of freed black slaves into the French cultural landscape of the American state of Louisiana, for instance. The Gnawa have undergone their own type of creolization and integration into the Moroccan social landscape. Gnawa people have created a distinct space in Moroccan society. They play a social and spiritual role, and in recent decades had become well-known public performers. Over the past 50 years in North Africa, Gnawa music, like the blues in America, has spread and attracted practitioners from other ethnic groups, in this case, Berbers and Arabs. You know, public non-ceremonial performances outside the Gnawa mystic order is a recent development. The Gnawa have turned the mystical aspect of their music into a more popular musical art. The Gnawa have, in the 1970s, when the only popular music available was the Middle Eastern type, some Moroccan artists started to look into other Moroccan traditions. One of the best examples is the group called Nas El Ghiwan, who created an original Moroccan pop music inspired by Gnawa music and mystical beliefs. One member of the band, his name is Abdurrahman Pako, himself a Gnawa master musician from Essaouira. In subsequent years, Gnawa music has engendered a style of pop music that appeals to a wide audience of listeners. Groups such as Nas El Ghiwan and Gigi Lala were the most listened to bands in Morocco in the 70s and 80s. In the 90s, other groups such as Nas Marrakesh emerged, who blend traditional music with new songs that connect with contemporary themes and audiences. Yet, for the Gnawa, their music is still primarily spiritual and used for healing purposes. Curiously, similar to jazz in America, Gnawa music is not recognized as a national music. The national music of Morocco is Andalusian music, which developed during the Muslim expansion into the kingdoms of Spain and came to Morocco with the expulsion of the Moors in 1502. Gnawa music has inspired the development of popular Moroccan music in general and is analogically similar to the African-American spirituals, gospels, and eventually the genre known as the blues. Also founded by former slaves. Recently, Western musicians interested in the African traditional music have discovered the music of the Gnawa. As a result, much collaboration has ensued between Gnawa musicians and famous jazz artists such as Randy Weston. The Gnawa are modernizing their style to make it more secular with more commercial appeal. With these recent developments and their appeal to tourists, the Moroccan government in 1997 established the Gnawa and World Music Festival in Essaouira. The legacy of the Gnawa has become another rich thread woven into the cultural cloth of modern-day Morocco. As such, Gnawa music provides a perspective through which we may view the history of blacks in Morocco. It is a medium to discover and recover the African roots that still live on in Morocco.
Let me thank our guests for an extremely thought-provoking talk about a place that I certainly know very, very little about. As expected, I did hear a lot about slavery and power and class and race. I didn't hear much about sex, though. A slave trade that lasts for, what, about 900 years, which would be about twice as long as the American slave trade, one in which seems to have parceled men off into armies and women off into domestic arrangements, might suggest something. And I thought I heard you say that most musicians were mixed race.
Yeah, mixed.
Could you say a little bit more about that? Who are the Gnawa? Are they black? Are they mixed? Are there levels of Gnawa-ness? What kind of debates do they have about ethnicity and race among themselves?
Mm-hmm. Okay. In all Africa, actually, we really don't have good understanding of slavery. That's, you know, the first statement I want to make. And for slavery in Morocco, I think we can come up with... But it depends on which time, you know, in Morocco, and which slavery. Is it female slavery or male slavery? And then I think we can maybe come up with the definition of slavery. So from the first part about women, female slavery, it is actually through female slavery that we have mixed race. One slice of the enslavement of blacks in Morocco was used for concubinage. Not all females, you know, they end up in to be concubines. And one important actually element in that practice of slavery, if the concubine is happened to have a child with the owner, then automatically there's some legal entitlements, and then the child automatically will be free. Okay, so here is now here the interplay that you have between race, identity, and gender. To understand it better, you know, if you come to the antebellum South, and then you just repeat the words of Frederick Douglass, and it is, you know, he says actually that the slaveholders have ordained, and by a law established, that actually all children of female slaves, they will be slaves. Okay, that is actually, that in Morocco didn't exist. There's the coupling between the religious rites, which is the female slave, once she has a child from the master must give her that right. And if she, in case, you know, there is maybe, you know, she will, if there is, you know, he will contest that he's not his child or something like that, she can sue him and go, there's this mobility to the judge. And the court might decide, you know, in her favor. And I have read actually many, you know, court cases in which not the father who actually didn't recognize the child, but actually it's the children who didn't recognize the brother because of inheritance, you know, problem. But and I read in those cases that actually that judge, you know, decided in favor of the concubine's child. That's why in Morocco it's not, you cannot talk about, you know, any discourse of racial purity. It's because of this concubinage system. Okay, so this is one part of it, right? And then, you know, if you talk about race, you know, and blackness, you know, and then you have many kings in Morocco that they were children of concubines. but they became kings, right? And the one of the example is actually Mawla Ismail, who died in 1727. There is another king, like 50 years later, another king 50 years later, and the king, the father of the king who died, father of the king of the father of this king, who just died in 1999, his mother was black. Yeah. But, I mean, were they considered black? No. Did they consider themselves black? No. They considered themselves Arabs. And also, they considered themselves Sharif, descendants from the Prophet. In Morocco, the status of the woman is irrelevant because she fits in the dominance of patriarchy, of the status of man. So in a way, the concubine will have a morganatic status in anthropological term, right, when she has a child with the master. See, so it's like, it's almost, you know, marriage, right? And so therefore, that's what has confused and obscured the racial definition, you know, in Morocco. If you look at Du Bois, at Frederick Douglass, right, these are actually white people in Morocco. So that's why race is more complicated in Morocco than it is here.
Join me with me one last time in thanking our guests for tonight.
You've been listening to a lecture presented by the African Studies Center and African American Studies Program at Boston University. Tonight's lecture was titled The Internal African Diaspora, Tracing the Origins of Ganawa Spiritual Music in Morocco. Speaking was Dr. Choke L. Hamill, Professor of History at Arizona State University. We began with an introduction by James Pritchett, Director of the African Studies Center. For a CD of Boston University's World of Ideas, call 1-800-909-9287. That's 1-800-909-9287. CDs are $15, which includes shipping and handling. Tonight's program was produced by Tim Skov and Matt Odette with help from Mike Toto. Our web producer is Angel Cazelli. I'm Deborah Becker. Thanks for joining us.